For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, it's the PLL Weekend Preview. It is Friday, a happy, a positive Friday. The PLL will roll into Charlotte, North Carolina, now the home of the Carolina Chaos, for week two of the PLL season. Carolina's got games Friday and Saturday. The Water Dogs are the team on a bye. Everybody else plays once. We'll preview each of those matchups, talk a little stuff about the league and things like that. As always, if you are liking the pod, please do subscribe, download, leave five stars, whatever that podcast platform you're listening to this on allows you to do. Share it with your friends. Thank you for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. I'm glad you're here. It's Friday, positive Friday, feel good Friday, PLL Friday. Premier Lacrosse League week two. Albany and training camp are in the rear view. We are on to Carolina this weekend. Four games this weekend, as it is most case. Three streaming on ESPN Plus, and then there is a linear game on ESPN2. I've loved how many games we have on ESPN, ESPN2, ABC. It's a good thing. It's always a good thing to me. I posted about the viewership number in Albany, did the 420K viewers and everything. We talked a little bit about it earlier in the week, noting that the PLL was up against the WNBA, the Champs League final, and kind of talked a little bit about how when you're up against the WNBA, particularly when it's Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese's first pro meeting, they're going to devour some audience. So I want to make a couple other notes, I think, just kind of on the viewership, too, from week one that I didn't mention then, but are worthy of noting when you look at these numbers. First, the PLL did not have really a notable lead-in for this game, meaning there was nothing on before it that was big and that was going to draw a big rating that would carry people into the PLL game. A good lead-in, still, even as we are in the world where streaming is going to be how people consume content, if you're going to be proud of being on linear, then you need to be looking for a good lead-in. And PLL didn't really have one this week. And I still think that's really important. The follow for it, the thing that was on afterwards, was a good one. So people come into the channel, you know, before their thing starts and catching what's on before is a way for people to find kind of the PLL on their dial. So ABC had in the slot after the PLL was on a Women's College World Series game between UCLA and Oklahoma. And I know as I say these things, I could already just like see in my mind the internet trolls like, oh, no one's watching the women's sports. 1.3 million people watched it. It was the fifth most watched sporting event of the day on Saturday. Hope that helps. So that's a good follow for the PLL. This weekend, when it comes to the game that's going to be on ESPN2, the PLL does have a good lead-in. There's a College World Series Super Regional on at 2 o'clock before the PLL game comes on. The follow isn't great, but a big lead-in, especially if that game turns out to be really good, that's important. So that could help kind of bump that number up. That and it's an ESPN2 game. That could bump that number up. I haven't looked to see what it's up against, but I know the lead-in is good. So the Super Regional that went up last week against the PGA, against Champions League, all that, still did about 750,000 viewers. So if you capture some of that audience and roll it into the PLL game, you're doing pretty good. The second thing, and this is kind of a question I got on social a little bit, that I wish I had this data, but I don't. Someone asked if I knew how the viewership for the PLL broke out regionally. I wish I did. That was not available in the data that I saw. I'm sure if I asked around, maybe it's something that I could find, but that's not usually something that's just out there kind of publicly. It is a very good question, though, because alongside kind of that reply, I got more replies than I thought I would expect it to get that was people who were basically saying, I'm in the Midwest and I don't want to watch anymore. And it seems like the Midwest crowd is really taking the no home team thing really hard. One person replied to me and said, this is exactly what they said. This is a quote. They lost Midwest PLL fans when they didn't put a team here close to the Midwest. It was a specific and deliberate choice that will have real consequences for the league until it's fixed. Somebody else goes, maybe ignoring the Midwest and deciding team locations has something to do with it. PLL persona non gratis around here. I wonder how wide that sentiment is. Midwesterners, are you that disenchanted with not getting a team in the Midwest that you're not going to even watch it anymore? That seems kind of drastic to me. And I mean, did the game in Minnesota, does that do nothing? I know if it's like the game's in Minnesota and I'm in Ohio or Chicago, it's probably not the biggest thing in the world, but does that Minnesota game do nothing for you? Indigenous celebration, I think, is what they're doing in Minnesota. And as a neutral site, you get all four teams. Someone's always missing in a home market, but not in Minnesota. I am fascinated by that sentiment. I would like to understand more about that. I can't imagine getting to a place where, I mean, look, I was pissed they didn't put a team in Connecticut. I know there's still teams closer to me than there are to the people who live in the Midwest, so it's not really the same thing, but I don't think I could ever arrive at a place where it was like, no team here? Well, I'm never watching the sport again. Like, that's a lot. That's big, but I'm curious about that. Something else people noted to me kind of about the viewership too was they said, you know, they watched a little bit, but they didn't like it. They said things felt gimmicky. And some of this I get. And I said it on social during the first game. This is just the first place I went to it where they talked about gimmicky. It's the first thing I thought of. We all love Matty Palem. Look, we all love, I got to open with that. Like, we all love Matty Palem. This is nothing against Matty Palem. But they had him mic'd up full time. They're cutting to him between the plays. Every time there's a call, we got to cut right to Matty P. Look, we love his rapport with the players, with the coaches. We love the way he interacts. He's going to be good for some sound bites and all that. I did not turn these games on to watch the referee. In any serious major sport, a game being called a ref show is a serious complaint. It means people aren't happy. It means the game's poorly officiated, and it also means it probably sucked to watch because you're looking at the refs the whole time. Well officiated or not, let's not deliberately make these lacrosse games a ref show every weekend, right? I do not need to hear from Matty Palem this much. If he's announcing a penalty, that's what I need to hear. If at the end of him announcing it, you catch a couple words he throws to the bench or whatever, fine. But like, I do not need full-time mic'd up Matt Palem. He's the referee. I don't care that much. I don't think anybody seriously interested feels like they need to hear from Matty P all the time. And honestly, like, I'm getting fired up about it. I shouldn't. But you know what? The whole broadcast I thought was over the top in week one. I'm getting hot about it. Maybe it's needlessly, but I mean, like, it was rough at times. And I got some DMs from former players and stuff like that, and people who are even, some who are currently in the league, who are like, this is not great. Too many cooks in the kitchen for me, personally. I love Boyle on the broadcast. He's the best in the business. I want him behind the microphone every single week. He is the best at the making the game accessible and high-level scheme and movement accessible in just a couple of sentences. It's hard to do, and he does it very well. So he's good for the seasoned vet, and he's great for the layman. And I, personally, I know they're not everybody's cup of tea. I will go to bat for and support Quint and Kark every single time. I know it's popular to take shots at those guys on social. Everybody loves to do it. The fact of the matter is, there's nobody calling lacrosse games who works and prepares as hard as those guys do. They spend the week getting into this stuff. And if you go around and you start looking for lacrosse broadcasters, a lot of them might just be folks who are just like, yeah, I'll show up for the check and it's something to do and I can throw it on my veal and won't really know a ton, maybe get a name or two wrong during the broadcast. Won't happen with these two. Don't take that for granted. They're going to get ready and they're going to give you a good show. That said, had a sideline interview during the Archers game where I think it was Quint on the sideline. They threw it down to Quint. He's there for the huddle for the Archers timeout. You know, he gets Bates afterwards and he's like, goes to Bates, hey, it looks like you had a Picasso on the whiteboard. And Bates just kind of smiles a little bit and goes, yeah, it's a fresh pen. And that was the end of the interview. That was it. That was the substance. And in the chaos game later, The booth is basically just having a conversation with Towers during the play. They did it later with Jamie Hanford, the defensive coordinator, too. It's just too much. It's just too much. Like, what is the point of that? I get it. Sometimes you're actually looking for some schematic kind of stuff, or you're looking for an insight. But when it's just like, just banter, what's the point? It feels like we do this because we are just in search of the next GIF, the next meme, the next soundbite, the next TikTok, the next thing we can just overplay the absolute hell out of and beat into the ground for however long it takes until we can forcibly squeeze out the next one. Things aren't allowed to just happen. They have to just be forced into being content all the time. And it's exhausting on these broadcasts. And the worst thing about it is that none of those people I just talked about are players. It's coaches. It's the referee. We really had one player mic'd moment that made waves all week. It was Jack Rowlett talking about Austin Kaup. And you know what? That's fine. It was a good piece of sound. It was organic. It was player-driven. It wasn't robotic. That's good. You get that every week, you're doing pretty damn well. The players are the star of the show here. The guys playing the game. I don't give a shit about getting some memeable sound from the referee, from the broadcast, from the coach, from whoever. And I'm going to venture to say there's a significant number of fans who feel the same way I do. Maybe there aren't. Maybe I'm alone in this. I don't know. I know I do a lot of this from an island, but like, I don't need the constant search for content in my PLL broadcast. I know we're trying to be cutting edge and do things that other people aren't doing. Other people are doing some stuff pretty well. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Just saying. I didn't mean to get all fired up about that. Anyway, on to the games. Let's talk about the games. Let's talk about the games and the guys playing them. Stuff that matters. As we said at the open, Water Dogs are the bye team this week, so they will not play a game in Carolina. They are getting a little bit closer to the return of Jack Hanna. Before week one, Coach Tierney did say he expected a few weeks without Jack, so, you know, bye here, maybe he's ready for next week, you know, you see, but Jack Hanna's return is coming, and then they get this week to get themselves ready, because next week is the Philly week, so they get the doubleheader right after their bye. It's a nice kind of turn of the schedule for them, so they get this week off, they get the doubleheader in Philly, playing games with Villanova next weekend. The first game we do have tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern start, I believe, the hometown Carolina Chaos take on the California Redwoods. As of this moment, Carolina is a 1.5 goal favorite at plus money. They're minus 125 on the money line. Two kind of storylines that are personnel related here for either team. First, the Blaze Reardon situation. We got the report that Reardon is not expected to miss extended time, a couple of weeks. That's awesome. I did not anticipate, did not see it coming. He is not listed as out on the injury report. He's just listed as doubtful, and he's in the 19-man roster. Him and Cowder, it. You go to the 20 and 21st guy, there's no goalie down there. They only have those two. So, Vierden almost assuredly will not be a go for this game. I mean, maybe he gives it a try. You know, we'll see. But Chaos have to get through the weekend with Vierden on, maybe on one leg. Who knows how his knee's doing, what kind of treatment he's had during the week, and Kaup. And we'll kind of see how that goes. I think, look, if you're a Chaos fan, you just got to be pumped because he never hit the IR. The IR designation, I believe, requires a 3-week stay. So the fact he didn't go on it means the Chaos expect him back in less than 3 weeks. It's just like kind of simple logic. But when you go from like non-contact knee injury to it's only going to be 2 weeks, you got to be thrilled with that if you're the Chaos. The other personnel news is Chris Gray is not in the Redwoods roster for the week. Not the 19-man, not the 21-man. He's not injured. He's not on the injury report. He's a healthy scratch. And I just got off the soapbox. Let's climb right back on. Chris Gray, as soon as he's not in the lineup, the whole world wants to know why. Why is he hurt? Somebody said it's not on his LinkedIn anymore. Did he quit lacrosse? Chris Gray has not quit lacrosse. Breaking news. He has not quit. But I think this is a good opportunity to kind of have a discussion about, you know, the nature of some of these, like the way the roster can go. Chris Gray's got a new job in New York. Sometimes when you start a new finance job in New York, it means you can't get out of the job on Fridays. And if the game's on Friday, sometimes guys can't travel and it just goes that way. That's where my mind went when I saw him not in the lineup. Was like, oh, he can't get out of work. That happens. Somebody was like, maybe his cousin's getting married, and kind of gave me a little like wink with it. So maybe he's just going to a wedding on Friday or Saturday or whatever. He can't make it. I don't know. One of those things, personal life thing. It's clearly not long term, because if it was, he'd go on the holdout list, but he's not there. Somebody on the Redwoods was like, I don't know the whole story. This is somebody talking to me. Was like, I don't know the whole story, but it's, you know, it's a week, maybe one more week this summer, it happens, that's it. They're expecting him to be in the lineup basically all the time. But I think when I kind of threw out there like, hey, he's got a job, he might not be able to miss it. Somebody's like, look, he might have a wedding. People were like, this is so unserious. This league is a joke. This doesn't make the league a joke. The league is not a joke. You can't ask a guy, and this is not particularly specific to Chris. This is about a lot of players in the PLL. These guys go to college for 4 or 5 years. A lot of them now are coming out of college with an MBA, with a master's degree in finance or in some other, you know, high-earning field. You can't ask these guys to just not take advantage of the degree they just got. They wouldn't go get it if they didn't have that as part of their goal, part of what they were expecting to be doing after college, is work in that world. So you can't fault them for going to do it. And yeah, some of those jobs are probably, you know, they're probably six-figure jobs. And the guys, you know, look, your lacrosse player's salary alone is not going to match that. Some guys work, they play two leagues, they do the camp, they do more, they get the sponsors, all that other stuff. Then they make it work, and yeah, there are guys who are making it as pro lacrosse players only, making six figures, and doing okay. That's not everybody, though. And for a guy who studies finance for 5 years and wants to get into that world, you got to go do that, and you got to start it when you're young. Pay your dues and the tough jobs where you can't take time off until you work your way up to a position to, you know, be a little more, I don't want to say leisurely, but you get what I'm saying. And maybe he's just going to a wedding. These are all things that are fine. It's okay for these guys to do it. It doesn't mean the league stinks, because it doesn't. PLL's great, man. I enjoy watching it every week. The games are really good. The players are really good. The 19 guys that are going to be on the field for the teams that are playing this weekend, for the 7 teams that are there, are all-world players. The league is not a joke. I know people are like, what happened to you can quit your job because now you make enough money? I don't think that was ever the promise here. I don't think anybody was ever suggesting that even when the PLL first launched and it was like 35 grand a man. Man, there aren't too many places out there where you can live the way, you know, a comfortable lifestyle on 35 grand. Read the newspaper, man. It's tough to live on that much money. It's tough to live on, you know, it's tough to live on six figures in some places for some of these guys. We don't need to get into all that. But look, the league is good. It's fun. The players that are in it, they still care about it because they're out there. And the money for them is okay now. But the idea from this, from Jump, is to get lacrosse to the place where these guys can make enough money to, when these teams are really have playing home and away schedules and everything, I think the goal is still just get these guys paid enough that they can live in the city where they're playing lacrosse. That when a guy goes from, you know, if he gets traded from the New York Atlas to the Carolina Chaos, he can move to Carolina and his player salary is going to support his move and moving himself, maybe his family, to another state to play lacrosse. That's the idea. That's pro athletics, the way we see it in all team sports. So that's what we're trying to get to. And I know I didn't want to go all the way pulling this thread just because of Chris Gray being out week two. But like, look, man, it's going to happen sometimes. Guys go on the holdout list. You know, Adam Patra's on the holdout list for the Whipsnakes because Loyola as a team is taking a trip to Europe right now. And he's with them. And that's an incredible experience. And he should do that. You know, guys who are going on the holdout list right out of school, sometimes it's because they got to start work right away. And their work is not going to allow them to play lacrosse. Kate Sostad a year ago got picked up by the Cannons and immediately put on the holdout list because everybody kind of knew he's starting a job that would probably not allow him to play much lacrosse. It happens for some of these guys. For some guys, as their career grows, ultimately they have to make a decision that do they have time for this or not. But it's always a matter of, can I keep doing it or not? I don't know how many people I can think of have ever up and quit, like pros who were like every week pros who up and quit playing because the money was bad. You know what I mean? Like they ultimately, their life kind of takes them away from it. Their life tells them you can't do it anymore. They don't say I'm done with this because I'm not getting paid like a NFL wide receiver. Seeing whoever, Justin Jefferson, getting $1 zillion this week. Like, I'd love to be there too. We're not there yet, though. None of that makes the league a joke. Like, it's so disingenuous to be like, this player made a choice to go to a wedding this weekend, so the league is bad. Like, those two dots do not connect at all. It's silly. The product is great. It's fun to engage with. I think the crowds are looking pretty solid. I thought Albany's crowd was decent. I took a look at the Ticketmaster map for Carolina today. Looks like they're on their way towards, you know, packing the place pretty well. These markets are supporting their teams. If you listened to the Xander Dixon interview this week, I asked him, how did it feel playing in front of now like a hometown fans and everything? And he was saying like they really fed off of it. The place being done up for them and their colors, like, felt awesome. They have a supporter section that they definitely drew on the energy of on that second day when they were gassed. Like, people are into this. You as an individual thinking, this player is going to a wedding this weekend, this player has to work this weekend, so he's not there, so the league is a joke, doesn't make it so. Doesn't make that an opinion that's widely shared. You can feel that way, but some of the people who tell me they feel that way have been feeling that way for years and still consuming the content. So, like, decide if you're about it or not. Find another sport to watch or stop watching. Stop engaging. It's okay. If you hate it and it's that big of a joke to you, it's all right. It'll be there for you to come back to when it gets to a place where, for whatever your standard is, your impossible standard, whenever it reaches that, you can come back and be a fan then. Still be here for you. Game doesn't throw people away permanently. So anyway, Chris Gray's not playing this week. Again, I expect Chris Gray to be in the lineup most weeks this summer. If it gets to be like this weird coincidence where he's always, if they're playing a Friday game, he's out, then you know it's a work thing, basically. You can kind of figure it out then. Maybe he's just, you know, but again, is it work? Is it a wedding? Whatever it is, who really cares? I'm sure the Redwoods could win by 100 this weekend, and the first question that Nat's going to get after the game is, what's up with Chris Gray? And I'm sure he's going to say it's a personal matter and that they expect him back. I'll give you the fast forward to the press conference. It's probably going to go something like that, but we'll see. Back to, again, the games themselves here. Carolina, they got the win last week, despite Carolina lost most major statistical categories last week. They were better in goals and they were better in their own goal with their goalie. But everything else, Denver won. That kind of day against the Redwoods, I don't think goes as well. So, I mean, you kind of want to see them elevate and be a little bit better than they were last week. They're kind of putting it together as a new team. The Redwoods are very much a rebuilt team. They didn't play last week. They had the week one bye, the kind of odd week one bye where they go through camp and then don't play a game. But to me, that means preparing for them is going to be very difficult because there's so many new pieces there. There's so many new stylistic things happening over there. And you don't have a week of game film to look at. The Chaos defense obviously is an excellent unit. I sincerely think, I guess I'll call it now, Will Bowen's going to be a DPOY finalist by the end of the year. He's going to be a Defenseman of the Year finalist, Will Bowen. Mark it. I think he's that good. You've got all pro guys down there like Rowlett, like Newman. Most weeks, those guys are standing in front of Blaze Reardon, and Will Bowen is the guy who's running the show. I like this as a test for him, though, because this group, like, there's so much new to the Redwoods. Bowen and company, they have to diagnose and adjust on the fly to the things that this new Redwoods team is doing. And I know, yes, Carolina grabbed a few Woods in free agency. You got Jules, and you got Sergio Perkovic. I don't think they're going to be able to offer a ton in the way of like a scout, like, oh, this is what we do. These are our calls. Like the Woods are just so different now, especially through that midfield. They're very different. They'll be able to offer some in the way of revenge factor. Both of these guys were kind of stuck in the periphery on the Woods. Jules didn't seem like he had a really super defined or even involved kind of role. Perkovic, we all know, look, last summer probably had his worst summer as a pro. After a week, both look very much re-energized for the chaos. Perk had the two goals, one a two-pointer on two shots. And they're looking less and less like players who are forcing it and more like players that are just kind of letting things come to them as a piece within the offense. Perkovic in particular looks like he's much more comfortable as just complimentary guy, secondary guy, there to shoot, not trying to just force it as a Dodger like you kind of saw last year at times. I think for the Woods, we get to see how this is all kind of coming along, right? Before the opening week, Nat said that he loved the polls that they had because they were all guys with something to prove. And I liked hearing that because that kind of thing can be powerful. Eppel has gone to Boston. Sexton and Glazner retired. Owen Grant on the PUP list. Sounds like it might be a while. A shoulder injury there that might take some time to heal. The unit down low for them has the familiar face of Arden Cohen and the familiar face of their goalie and Jack Kelly. But after that, we'll see. I don't know. They've got Ryan Kennedy listed as a close defenseman. Nat gave Chris Fake some praise during camp. Really liked him. I expect that, you know, Chris Fake gets the nod down low. Jared Connors will be the LSM. Looks like Holden Garland will be the LSM along with them. But Holden Garland can play down low as well. It's kind of a big question mark about how this whole thing goes. Something I'm going to watch here, if Fake gets the start down low against this chaos team. In his college career, Fake sometimes had issues guarding the burners, the speedy change of direction guys who just want to go around you, not through you. Like the Grant Ament types, those kind of guys. Cohen kind of had some issues with similar guys. He had some issues guarding Sowers last year. The Chaos have a lot of that. With Minikas, with Ross Scott, even guys like Kyle Jackson and Jules. A defense full of bruisers who want to have a fist fight might have a harder time with a roster full of speedsters like the Chaos can put on the field. I think on the offensive end for the Woods, we get to see kind of how they're going to arrange things. Chris Gray being out this week makes it a little easier. You'll probably just see Bob Pennell, Vider, Garnsey, Westberg at attack. And you don't have to worry about how Gray fits in to make that a foursome and who of them would come out of the box. I think the midfield group on paper, I think, looks good. Vicky Miaison came off the holdout and PUP or whatever this week, but he is not in the 19 man for the weekend, so I guess he's still kind of making it back. But when he gets back, that's a boost to the short stick D-Midi, a boost to the two-way midfield unit. We get our first look at him hopefully sometime soon in a 10v10 game. We've only seen him in the sixes format. We saw him for the champ series. That's all we've really seen him do. So I'm not totally sure he'll push guys like a Cole Kurst, Charlie Bertrand, Romar, Nekhai Montgomery. Is he going to push them down out of that first midfield group? Probably not right out of the gate, but it is some serious size. And if you have not a ton of depth in your midfield, or you have guys trapped on who aren't used to playing D, and the Woods bring Ricky out of the box at you in a couple of weeks, that's going to be scary. This is going to be a game where I'm going to be kind of looking for adjustments, right? Like, after a quarter, how do the Chaos change to say, all right, this is what the Redwoods are doing. What are we going to do to change to stop it, if anything? How do they play their defense when they don't have Blaze behind them? How do the Redwoods scheme their defense to handle the Chaos speed? I think that's going to be the fun part of this game is the way the scheme changes. But second game of tonight's double dip, Friday Night Lights here. The defending champ Utah Archers play the Denver Outlaws. As of this recording, we actually have the fabled 2.5 goal line. Utah's -2.5 at even money, I think. Pretty decent sized money line favorite. The 2.5 goal spreads only come along a handful of times a season. They're not common. The vast majority of games are going to be a 1.5 goal spread. I checked in with Dan Alexander on this. He's Newbie Talks on Twitter. You should follow him if you're not, especially if you're into the wagering thing. Coming into the 2023 season, teams were 10-4 as a 2.5 goal dog, and they came into this year 12-7. So it did not go great for them last year. Hutton Jackson, again, if you're a lacrosse betting person, Hutton's a must follow. You could probably just spend a year tailing him and make money, but pointed out that last year was the first time the 2.5 goal dogs had a losing record. 2021, they were 6-2. 2022, 4-2, 2023, 2-3. You'll also notice fewer of those games every year. These lines happen less and less. So up until a year ago, they were a great bet, but now maybe not so much, those 2.5 goal dogs. For Denver, I think you just kind of want to see an offense that looks more comfortable together. Week one, it really did look like a team still figuring itself out, figuring each other out. Somewhat ironically, watching that game, I was like, man, what this offense really needs is a guy like Connor Schellenberger, but that's a whole other podcast. I think part of this comes with playing a lot of guys out of position, right? Like, you look up and down this roster, the Outlaws roster, just count the natural midfielders. Justin Anderson, Graham Bundy, Sam Hanley. End of list. Cross Ferreira is an attackman. Brendan O'Neill is an attackman. Wisnowskis an attackman. Zawada, Jack Myers, even Dylan Gregar, Dalton Young, if you really, I mean, like, these are really all natural attackmen. And it's hard to get an offense that really flows and is cohesive that's got that many converted attackmen out of the box. I mean, just ask the 2022 Cannons how it went. That was a team with like two natural middies and a bunch of attackmen. Did not go well. The thing is, I'm not sure what I want to see here. Like, if they put Brandon at attack from jump this week, I'll be like, ah, good, natural position, but does that really solve anything? It's a big ask to get all these guys on the same page, particularly when Brennan and Bundy are so new. Maybe the good news here, the Archers defense is probably going to still be figuring things out a bit too. They gave up 51 shots, 36 of them on goal to the Water Dogs. That's a lot. Brett Dobson was back there, made 23 saves, so that's the difference in the game. But as I noted on Wednesday, if he finishes that game with 21 saves, the Archers lose. That's how much the offense did damage for the Water Dogs. So the Archers only had 4 caused turnovers in that game. If you take away the 19 ground balls that Sisselberger had facing off against a team with no specialist, then the Archers actually lose the ground ball battle if you take away kind of Sisselberger's gimmies. It's an opportunity here for Denver to kind of play a defense that's getting comfortable without some of their key pieces, or they're still trying to figure out who's filling whose shoes, and they get to kind of figure out what kind of offense that they are. Also of note here, no pun intended, Matt Note was added this week. Sean Scudoni was on the injury report with a knee injury. He's already been ruled out for the weekend. So Owen McElroy, Matt Note, get the duty. Neither one with a ton of PLL experience. Note is a rookie. McElroy has gotten time in the champ series and, you know, some time during the regular season a little bit, but McElroy was also, I think, a 2-time goalie of the year in college. So I am a believer in the Outlaws defense still. I will continue to pound the drum that Tarasenko is a top three, two-way player in the world. Luke Wehrman, now the top faceoff guy for Denver with Farrell being released. He will get his first big challenge as a pro here because he gets Sisselberger this week. If he keeps things near 50-50, it's a win, I think. Since the Archers are so good in the 32, if you can limit the possessions there, then that's key. But I think those are the spots I'm going to be watching most closely. The week-over-week improvement for Denver's offense and the Archers' defense. Wehrman in that big test. And then the goalie spot for Denver are kind of the key places for me. The next day, the Saturday slate. First game, 5 p.m., now flexed to ESPN2. You got to put them on TV after that weekend. The New York Atlas and the Carolina Chaos, hometown chaos, are flexed to linear TV. As of this moment, the Atlas are a 1.5 goal favorite against your hometown Chaos. If you're picking games and all that, do consider this is the second Chaos game of the weekend, and it could wear on you. Again, I wanted to make a point of it to ask Xander Dixon, how'd you feel for game two? And he was like, we were gassed. That second game is hard. And a second game in 24 hours is hard. Something else of note, when they flexed this game, I was very happy, I think, because getting the hometown team on linear to me is a really good thing. I like the decision to get Carolina there against the hot New York Atlas team. It made sense to make that game the TV game. Charlotte is always a market that has supported pro lacrosse well. They've had good crowds. Showing it on TV feels like an easy win. There's a lot of Carolina guys either connected because they're just from the area now, because the area has grown so much in the lacrosse world, or they've gone to college in the Carolinas. that showing them on TV, showing Charlotte on TV and showcasing what's happening in that region makes sense. Ryan Flanagan, who knows the Carolina lacrosse world probably better than anyone, pointed out that this is going to impact the crowd. And I was like, oh, yeah. Let's check the tournament scene. And yeah. Another Carolina lacrosse person pointed out to me, there's a tournament running just about the entire day that day. Game's starting at like 9 a.m. Last game ends at like 9 p.m. Or last game, I guess. I don't know if it starts or ends around 9 p.m., but late. Younger kids are playing in the morning and like early afternoon, which probably helps the PLL demo a little bit because the older kids, the middle school, high school kids start later, but that older demo, they won't be able to get there for a 5 p.m. start time. Had the chaos been the second game, the chances of a bigger chunk of kids from the tournament getting there, you're talking 100 teams, folks. Like this is over 100 teams at the tournaments in town. So you got over 100 teams in Charlotte for these events. And you want to get as many of those kids to games as you can for the hometown team, too. Probably would have been better for Carolina to be the late game, but it sounds like you'll get a chunk. You'll get the younger kids, which is good. You'll get them at the 5 p.m. start. Again, now on ESPN2. They called it, they're billing it Battle of the Undefeateds with, I mean, the Redwoods might change the Battle of the Undefeated narrative on Friday. We'll see. But to the game itself, we talked Carolina a bit already. In this game, goalie situation is going to be critical. The Atlas across two games last week shot, I think, 39%, which is insanely good. Jeff Teat, Schellenberger, they're finding guys like Dixon. Again, check out his interview this week if you haven't, with for like just crazy high percentage looks. Docs Aitken is off to a great shooting start. He's, you know, scored a goal in the opening seconds of each of their first two games. The Atlas shoot the ball that well, and frankly, they shot it well enough to beat healthy Blaze Reardon over those two games. So it's a big day for whoever's going to be in goal for Carolina. I talked a little bit about the Chaos Speedsters already. I think the Atlas defense handles that pretty well. Adler is a full-time guy, you know, if he's all the way healthy. I know, I think he's questionable, but and he had been a bit banged up in week one, but if he's full go, he can erase somebody. The question is, who do you want to use him on? Sometimes righty-lefty is a consideration. With Adler, I don't think it really matters. You know, he can get the Josh Byrne assignment and do fine. This is another good test for Will Bowen as defensive organizer guy, field general guy. Because you have to see things the way Jeff Teat and Connor Schellenberger see things, and you got to see it before they do. That is a tall order. Jeff Teat completed 89 passes opening weekend. Nobody else in the league broke 50. He was humming it around. Ball was moving. Teams were switched. I mean, the Whipsnakes had to switch matchups in the first quarter in their game. And honestly, like that comes from great individual play, but that turns into starting just great team offense. I think what's really been critical, and I'm going to take a much closer look at it, I think, this week, but the Atlas are so much better in the 32. I started charting faceoffs from week one because I wanted to see the difference from last year. Because that first game where they dealt with the Prevent against the Water Dogs, they were horrific. And they could not do anything against it. But in just quarter one, in that first game against Boston, Trevor wins 9 of 10 faceoffs. I'm not going to count the one with less than a half a second left at the end of the quarter. Nobody made an effort at it. I don't even know if Baptiste was on the field for it. But on those wins that he had, the Atlas scored goals on 5 of the 9 of them in the 32-second possession, with an average of 17 seconds left on the shot clock when they did it. And on 2 of those possessions where they didn't score, a flag was down. And they just took a shot that went wide or whatever. They took a quick shot to get to the extra man. They had 23, and I think they scored on both the extra mans, by the way. They had 23 or more seconds of clock remaining when they had their full offense on the field after winning the faceoff. Every single possession except one where they had 18 seconds left. Much better. Way better. And that could be a key for them. And again, you heard Dixon talking about it this week, how much they made an emphasis. It was maybe the thing they focused on most in camp was getting better at the 32. And I think you see it. I also thought I think it was funny that he was like, they were looking at this scheme. When do you dump it? When do you do this? When do you do that? You know, all these different ways to deal with it. And Jeff Teat just being like, you know, 32 seconds might just be enough. And it looks to them like 32 seconds is plenty. So I think that is a key there. Can Baptiste keep winning? Can he win it against Nick Rowlett? And the Atlas continue to sub well, get the early offense before that chaos defense really gets organized. Try and quick strike them the way they did against the Whips. Second game, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Maryland Whipsnakes, Boston Cannons. The last game of week two. Cannons right now are a 1.5 goal favorite. I think at even money. Whips get the last game of the weekend again. Both these squads going to be hungry, man. Nobody wants to be 0-2. Somebody is going to be 0-2 and at the bottom of the East after this weekend. After like, whoever comes out of this game, the loser, is in last place in the East. So you don't want to be that team. You don't want to be looking up at everybody. The Whips got blitzed pretty early last week by Atlas. Couldn't quite come all the way back from it. Cannons basically just got smacked by the Atlas. They gave up 19 goals. For the Cannons, I think there were positives to last week. Yeah, they got beaten pretty good, but a couple of good things. Number one, they only had 9 turnovers. And if you subtract, I like to do the, when you look at the ground balls, it's always going to be skewed in a game where somebody has a specialist and somebody doesn't, because one team's going to win every faceoff and win every ground ball that way. But if you take those away, and it kind of leads you to more of this true ground ball number of the ones that are non-faceoff ground balls, the Cannons won that ground ball game against the Atlas, and I think that's meaningful. So with that few turnovers and winning the ground ball and doing that kind of thing, like they didn't beat themselves. The Atlas showed up and just outplayed them in a lot of different phases of the game. In the PLL, it's going to happen some weeks. A team full of all-world players is going to be having a better day than your team of all-world players. It's just going to happen sometimes. I don't think we will ever have an undefeated PLL season. But I think being able to say, we didn't give it away, that's a positive that you can take out of it. I know losing sucks, but I think being able to say, we didn't beat ourselves. We gave it a shot. Defense could have played better. I think they're adjusting with the new DC and Hartzell and some new personnel. I think people will seriously begin to appreciate Jack Guilty much more now that you're seeing a defense without him. It was like watching the Redwoods without Glazner last year, where it was like, whoa, chickens with their heads cut off at sometimes, communication breakdowns, disorganized at times. You see it. You see the value of the player when they're not there. And I usually hate that argument for valuing a player, but for a guy like Keelty, it makes a difference having him in there. I trust their offense to be fine. Jim Mitchell's a great OC. That's a group that I thought played well last week. Like I said, they didn't turn it over. They didn't give it away. They didn't shoot great, but it's a group that you trust to shoot it well, right? I mean, an offense with a guy like Marcus Holman's not going to have too many down shooting weeks in a row. For the Whips, I would imagine they go back to Bernlohr and Nett. As we noted, you know, early in the week, Stagnetta kind of took some of the blame for Bernlohr's bad start against Atlas. Bernlohr was with the team he coaches all week, the high school team at a state tournament. Then his travel to get to Albany was a disaster. He gets to the team late. It all adds up to basically he was going into that game cold for the most part. Like, he got some pregame warm-up, and that was basically all he got. So Bernlohr will get the proper preparation this week, and I would expect him to be better. Without that early blitz, the Whips win that game. One thing I will say, though, is that the Atlas on the second half of a doubleheader and the Whips really couldn't quite close as quickly as they needed to against a team that was that tired and that banged up, short guys and everything. Maybe a little bit concerning. You would expect them to be able to kind of close that gap against, you know, a team with Brian Costabile on one leg, Gavin Adler a little banged up. You know, you got Schellenberger out of the lineup. Guys are gassed. They're clearly tired. Couldn't quite close that one out, but the faceoff spot's going to be good. Peter LaSala went week one. Joe Nardella makes his very long-awaited return to the field game this week. The Cannons went with a faceoff specialist this week. They have Zach Tucci in the lineup, but just because he's there, I'm not inclined to think he will still take every faceoff. Like, if the first 7 faceoffs, Nardella goes 6 of 7, then I can see the Cannons getting to a place where they just say, prevent, and you're not going to win any, so let's not worry about one more guy to sub. You know, I honestly was of 2 schools of thought here about Nardella for the week, about what to do with this faceoff spot. The 19-man is obviously, yeah, it's out now, so we know it's Nardella, but when you're thinking about it, do you think, all right, let's get Nardella back into action this week because he'll probably be successful against a team that might not use a specialist or will be a matchup that we feel Nardella is going to be the better guy in? Or is that the best way to get him back into PLL action? Or do you hold him again, letting him get fully ready because a prevent means he'll just get bodied and hacked by a shorty on every draw anyway. And if he's a guy coming back from a bruising indoor season, you might want to spare him that. It's kind of an interesting way to think about it, but I feel like this is going to be a fun game. You get Zapatello maybe guarding Kavanaugh again. They're going to be fresh in each other's minds. Maybe Zap guards a different Kavanaugh, but the defense there will be good. You know, the Whipsnakes trying to figure out the defense there will be good. I think they're still kind of looking for solutions at LSM. Zupacic to me is very much going to be the guy. But getting him up to speed on the defensive end is where I think some of the growing is still happening. On the ground balls, on wings, going in transition, he's looking great. But as an individual defender, there's going to be some tough matchups this week. There's going to be Matt Campbell, some other really good middies out there for the Cannons. So that's going to be a fun one to watch too. But that's the games. That's the Carolina weekend. It's going to be good. I'm excited for it. No interview today. My cadence kind of going forward, the way I want to do this is early in the week, I have an episode with an interview with somebody who just played in a doubleheader, because I like to hear about those kind of things, and somebody who played, therefore, in their home market, which I think would be interesting to hear about as guys play their home market game. What do they think of it? And then late in the week, probably just a solo show with me previewing the games for the weekend. If you think that sounds good, great. If you think that sounds terrible, great. Let me know. But that's going to be it for today. Thank you for coming back and for sticking around with me. Enjoy the games this weekend. I'm excited to watch them myself. So have a little Friday night happy hour lacrosse, a little Saturday grilling if it's sunny near you. Summertime. Enjoy the lacrosse. Thank you for sticking around with me. We'll see you next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.